This is the Feet in Two Worlds podcast.
We talk about like the right and the obligation of the immigrant.
These aren't just businesses. They're a very important part of the experience of being American and Chinese at the same time.
I just got told, well, I'm not going to go to college. They don't take immigrant people.
They were raised and taught that it's so taboo to be out. Here in the States, they are able to express it or show it.
Once they're inside, it's like they're transported back to Manila, to Philippines, in their own favorite Jollibee store.
Feet in Two Worlds, telling the stories of today's immigrants.
Religion, faith, identity. Challenging subjects for journalists to report on. What's it like for reporters who cover these issues in immigrant communities with strong religious ties? I'm John Rudolph, executive producer of Feet in Two Worlds, a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School. As part of our online magazine focusing on religion and faith in immigrant communities, we wanted to get a sense of what it's like to report on religion for immigrant audiences for whom faith is an integral part of who they are and how they see themselves. With me in the studio are Reem Nasser, one of the hosts of the radio show Muslim State of Mind on WBAI in New York. Welcome, Reem.
Thanks for having me.
And Martina Starosta. She's a video journalist with the Jewish Daily Forward. Welcome, Martina.
Thanks.
Reem, you wrote an essay last year for the website ArtsMike where you had some kind of interesting things to say. You said, being Muslim doesn't just mean not being Christian or Jewish. It means not being white. And as history has shown us, not being white in America can lead to certain complications. Now, you weren't speaking specifically about immigrants, but many Muslims in the U.S. are immigrants or are the children of immigrants, as are you. And so country of origin, ethnicity, and faith are all tied together. And what I'd like to do in this conversation is look at the role of journalists in reporting on religion for audiences who are themselves immigrants with strong religious identities. How is reporting about Islam on a radio show aimed primarily at Muslims different than, let's say, reporting for a mainstream non-Muslim audience?
I think a lot of it comes down to the types of issues we decide to cover. So for Muslim Americans, any issue that happens, anything that comes up in the news, we're always looking for ways to tie it back to our Muslim American identity. And let's say within the past 10 years of 9/11, that identity has always been in the forefront of what we're thinking about. So whenever we're walking in the street and somebody looks at us, subconsciously, the first thing we think about is, oh, are they looking at me because I'm Muslim? Have they noticed something about me? So it's a part of our identity. It's part of what we think about. And so in this radio show, we're targeting both Muslim audiences and non-Muslim audiences. And so for the Muslim audiences, what we're trying to do is just bring up issues that we're talking about in our homes, talking about over the dinner table. For example, things that come up in the news, like what's happening in Syria, what's happening in Iraq, those are big issues that we're talking about for two different reasons. First, some of our families are from those countries. For example, my mother is part Syrian, part Lebanese, so her family's in Syria, so we're talking about, you know, what's happening there? Why is that important? But we're also talking about it from the perspective of us being Muslim Americans. And so we're Americans. Are our tax dollars going to support something there? What is President Obama doing about it? So it's interesting to us for a lot of different reasons. And so on a radio show like Muslim State of Mind, we're basically trying to just open the field to, let's talk about Syria, for example, or let's talk about Ferguson. And what are the ways in which this affects us directly, and what are the ways in which this affects us indirectly?
Let me stop you there and ask this. It sounds in a way that you're trying to explore issues, but you're also trying to, for lack of a better term, normalize the image of what a Muslim is. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's part of our struggle all the time is like, when is something just about religion and when is something just about the issue itself? A lot of times, you know, people will stop me and be like, oh, well, how do you feel about this? And I'll say, well, I mean, I don't really have any direct relation to it. But I mean, the fact that I'm Muslim, I don't know what you want me to say. I can't represent a billion people. We're trying to just open the conversation on the radio show so that we can get at these issues.
Is it a way of, in a sense, saying we're like everybody else in America? Is that part of the message that you are conveying both to your Muslim listeners and your non-Muslim listeners?
Yes, for sure. I mean, Muslim State of Mind isn't only talking about religion, for example. We're talking about everything, culture, politics, art, literature, religion for sure. But it's part of just saying, hey, we're Muslims and we're Americans, and Americans are interested in a lot of different things, not necessarily just religion.
And when you say you're Muslims, are you talking about that in a religious context or in a cultural context?
I think that's a great question, and it depends on who you ask. For me, it's both. But Islam is different than other religions because it's not just a religion where on one day of the week you practice and then that's it. It's a complete way of life. It is literally a part of every decision, every thought you have, everything comes back to it. So for somebody who's practicing like me, for example, yes, it's both a religious and cultural identity.
Martina, as I understand it, you're not Jewish, but you produce online content for one of the oldest ethnic newspapers in the country, the Jewish Daily Forward. What's been your experience reporting on a religious and cultural community as someone who is from outside of the community?
So I was born in Poland, and then I was raised in Germany. And in Germany, I worked for a long time in Holocaust education as an educator. So I had some background knowledge about the history of Judaism, especially in Europe. And then when I started working at The Forward, it was really thrilling to see how vibrant the Jewish community is in New York. Again, coming from Europe, where I learned a lot about Jews, but I didn't really interact like with many people or communities.
So it was more theoretical in Europe.
Yeah, it was very theoretical. And then here, I'm really astonished to see how diverse the Jewish community is. And the Jewish Daily Forward is a national publication. But because I do video, my focus is mostly in the New York area. The community is just so broad. You have people who are extremely secular, where they identify Judaism through culture, not through religion. And then you also have the very Orthodox, ultra-Orthodox and Hasidic communities as well, who are very focused on religion, right? And so I come to these communities as an outsider, but I do think that it gives me often the advantage to ask very simple questions.
So give me an example of a question that you can ask that maybe a reporter who is Jewish couldn't ask.
I mean, everything that has to do with religion and traditions, I ask. I did something about Passover, and there's this tradition where everything has to be cleaned and every single breadcrumb has to be removed. And I could just chat with the rabbi and be like, start from scratch. And I do think that that's an advantage because our audience is very broad as well. And so there are many people who consider themselves Jewish in some way, but who also lack that very specific knowledge. And so I often say, keep in mind that we also have a secular audience. Please define what you mean by this religious term.
So are there times when you say to yourself, or maybe your editor says to you, we have to be really careful to get this right because people are watching and you need to make sure that you don't sort of misrepresent a religious practice or a belief or what have you? Is that something that kind of hangs over you and you're worried that you're maybe there's an extra level of concern because you're not Jewish, you weren't raised Jewish, that you could make a mistake that your audience would then somehow latch onto and either criticize you for or in some way would question the validity of the reporting in the newspaper as a whole?
It is a question that I keep in mind. And one of the advantages of my job is that I either work by myself, maybe 50-70% of my assignments I just do by myself. And then the other ones I collaborate with other reporters, right? So for instance, I worked on a piece about wigs in the Orthodox communities and what they mean for Jewish women.
When a woman gets married, the woman's hair becomes an intimate object. It becomes erva, something that you should cover. And only your husband can see it. We have girls that are coming in and their mothers are not covering their hair. And they're starting this journey of covering their hair. They feel they want to go the extra mile and be more observant. You can cover your hair with a scarf, with a hat, with a wig.
covering your hair with a wig, you know, is not an excuse to just let yourself go. You should put on that wig, make sure you wash it and set it every month. Your wig should definitely be a representation of who you are.
That was an assignment that I did in collaboration with Fremet Goldberger, who herself grew up in a very strict Orthodox community in Kiryas Joel, in the Satmar community. And so we just talked a lot and we asked each other a lot of questions. And so whenever I have questions or doubts, I just try to touch base and check in with my colleagues.
Now, Reem, you are a practicing Muslim, but there are many different strains of Islam. And I wonder if the same issue comes up for you, that you worry about saying things that are either incorrect or ill-informed or will offend some strain of your audience.
I mean, when you have a religion that's this large and vast, and there's so many people, everybody has their own opinions. And Islam is also, there's a lot of interpretation within the religious texts. And so everybody, you know, practices a little bit differently. Everybody has some thoughts on what you should and should not do. And so we've definitely come across this issue. I can't remember any specifics on the show, but I do know that we've had a lot of feedback from listeners online saying like, well, actually, we don't do that. I don't know if you do that, but we don't do that. Or this is not religiously correct. So yeah, it is tough. And a lot of times on the radio, we'll just, you know, give a big disclaimer. We're just talking, we're discussing, there's a lot of different opinions. So, you know, keep an open mind.
Well, you know, I think that's great that you do that. But on the other hand, my sense is that unlike politics, religion has this sort of supercharge. I mean, nobody wants to talk about it with their relatives around Thanksgiving. They don't want to talk about politics, but they definitely don't want to talk about religion because it's even more difficult than politics. So despite the disclaimer, I would imagine there's a lot of places where you can get yourself into trouble.
Yes, definitely a lot of places. But we try not to get discouraged by that. We still try to talk about what we want to talk about.
What would you say would be an example of a really big stumbling block that you've run into where you all of a sudden felt like, uh-oh, we're going into territory where maybe we have to be very careful or we shouldn't be at all?
We did a segment a few years ago about sex education in the Muslim community. So we were talking about how young should our children be when we start talking to them about this? How should we educate them about this? And it's kind of a taboo subject. We don't like to talk about it with our kids. They're too young. They don't need to know about this. And on the other hand, you have kids growing up who are not getting the necessary information that they need. So we did a segment. We talked to some experts, and we kind of just wanted to feel out the issue of, you know, how do people feel about this? When should we talk about this? Why is it so important to do that?
I have with me on the phone a New Jersey-based author, Susie Ismail, who will help me understand more about the history and approach to sex education in our community. So this is something very taboo in our community. What do you think that we can do to kind of change this attitude towards it so that our young people really do have the right information and the right attitude towards it?
And I think it begins with kind of schooling our parents, re-educating our parents, teaching our parents. And to be honest, with many parents who have been through the public school curriculum or have grown up maybe in this country and have seen the damaging effects, maybe I want to say, of leaving things, you know, leaving children to learn on their own or, you know, leaving it up to the school to teach, I'm hoping that those parents are going to come out and realize that they have to take charge and they need to be the ones introducing the idea and the concepts behind sex education to their children in an Islamic perspective, in an Islamic environment, when the children are still young enough to be willing and eager to learn from their parents.
And of course, we got a barrage of, we don't even need to talk about this. This is inappropriate. Why are we talking about this over the airwaves? You know, we have more important things to focus on. We should be focusing on what's happening in Palestine, for example. We should be focusing on this. But at the end of the day, I sat down with the rest of the team and we talked about it. And I think we were just, I think we felt really relieved that we were able to just talk about something for once. And even though not everybody, but some people weren't happy with the conversation, it felt good to just get it out there.
Well, that leads to another question that I want to ask both of you, which is that in Feet in Two Worlds, we often encounter journalists who write for publications that serve immigrant communities, where the communities themselves are really very reluctant to get into certain issues. They don't want to. I mean, I've heard it described as we don't display our dirty laundry in public. And I wonder if either of you have encountered that in the reporting that you do, and how do you deal with that when it's an issue that you feel is important, that you feel is something that needs to be explored in the journalistic setting, but that the community or the individuals that you're trying to interview are not particularly interested in going there? Martina?
So I'm not Jewish, and I'm also not religious, right, in any way. And so for me, when I look at, there's like at the Orthodox communities, there's a lot of questions about gender and gender equality. And that might be one of the issues that is difficult to touch on or that people would be reluctant to talk about with the Forward, who is, they perceive often as a very secular publication.
So not representative of the Orthodox point of view.
Of their own community. And so one very positive experience that I had was last year I attended this conference, which is called the Jewish Orthodox Feminist Alliance. And so that was a place where people within the Jewish Orthodox community would gather, and all of them in some way or another considered themselves feminists. And I guess in a very different way that I define myself as a feminist, but that was at least something that by entering that space, I met them in a place where they were open to talking about the challenges they encountered and how they were solving them.
So you had to find, though, this organization that sort of had gotten there on its own, and then you went in and did the reporting on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Reem, you have an example of, well, you did talk about this one show you did, but I wonder if there are other examples of topics that you've really had a hard time getting at because of reluctance within the community.
Yeah, we a while ago, too, we did a segment about domestic violence in the Muslim community. As Muslim Americans, we're very cognizant of the stereotypes against us. And so, for example, and this happens to a lot of minorities, you know, domestic violence occurs in every community, in every race, all over the world. There's no proof that shows it happens more in one place than another place. There's no proof that shows one religion has it more than any other religion. But the fact of the matter is human beings have this problem. So, and it happens in the Muslim community just like anywhere else. But Muslims don't want to say that out loud because they're like, they're assuming that the person listening is going to be like, well, of course, yeah, you're Muslims and you have no gender equality. Of course you're beating your woman. So getting a segment like that on the air for Muslims to call in and say, and let's talk about this, what are your thoughts, was tough. And we got a lot of feedback saying, like, people are assuming that this is what we are like. Why are you showing them that that is actually the case? We should be showing them that, no, we don't have this problem, which I understand because it's traumatizing being in a place where somebody is, where people are always looking at you and your religion and your community and your identity and assuming things about you. But at the same time, I think it's unfair to not talk about it. And it, if it's a problem here and a problem everywhere, I think everybody should be talking about it.
So was that the response that you gave to the people who criticized you?
Yeah, we really tried to back this one up and say that this is something that's important to us and it's important to everybody and to all Americans. And so just hear us out. Let's just talk about it. And we're not saying that this is a problem that's unique to us or to anybody else. But if we talk about it, we can help out a lot of people.
Are there ever moments, though, in a debate like that when you are saying to yourself, well, maybe they're right. Maybe we shouldn't be doing this because of the difficult situation that Muslims find themselves in the U.S. today because of the history of 9/11 and what's going on in the Middle East and in the Far East and so forth?
I think when I was younger and I was more afraid and always just so, you know, scared of what people would say to me, I that would probably be the case. But now I feel I'm more confident in my identity and where I've come. And I feel like I can talk about these things, but also just always mention that, you know, what the broader context is. So, yeah, you know, we have this problem and everybody has this problem. So we all should be talking about it.
Now, do you think that being Muslim gives you greater access to people in of the Muslim faith and in immigrant communities that are predominantly Muslim than someone who was not a Muslim?
I do. I think getting sources and getting access to certain events, it is helpful. I think sometimes, and Martina brought this up earlier in the interview, I think it might be challenging because if I am writing or producing for an audience that's non-Muslim, then I might assume that I know some things and forget that the audience doesn't know them. So I'll go to an event, they're all Muslim there, and I'll write about it, and I'll just totally forget that the context of who's listening to this isn't somebody who's familiar with what are the very basic practices of somebody in the Muslim faith. And so sometimes it's a little bit tricky.
So you have to know who your audience is.
Absolutely, absolutely. Even on Muslim State of Mind, the majority of our audience is just the WBAI non-Muslim base. And so when we're talking about issues, we really have to be cognizant of breaking it down. So the month of Ramadan is coming. We always do segments on the air about that. But we have to break it down. So what is Ramadan? Why do we celebrate? What do we do? And it would be totally different if we were talking just to a Muslim audience.
But even within, as you said earlier, even within a Muslim audience, there are different practices and different levels of religious devotion, I guess you would say. Even when you break it down, who are you breaking it down for?
Exactly. Yeah, it's always a challenge, but it's fun.
Yeah, Martina.
I wanted to add a little bit to what you said. So I told about the things that I'm not, like I'm not Jewish, I'm not religious, but I did notice that other parts of my identity make it often easier or more difficult to connect, which one of them is gender. And so I did a lot of video portraits recently or this year about women who I found fascinating. So one of them was a sword swallower on Coney Island. And then the other one was a performance artist.
A Jewish sword swallower.
She was a Jewish sword swallower. The only one, she claims, in America. And then I made another one about a woman who moved from Tel Aviv to Berlin and who is a sex workers' rights advocate and very critical of Israel politics. And so these portraits I felt were very intimate. And I think that I got that access because we shared the same gender identity. I think that made it easy. Where now I finished a video where I interviewed three female CEOs of Jewish organization and we talked about the gender gap. And I believe that they opened up more than they might have with a male reporter. At the same time, sometimes it's more difficult for me to interview, say, ultra-Orthodox men, right? So that's why.
Because they don't want to talk to you, or it's more difficult for you because you don't know how to approach them?
I fear that often it's a little bit more stiff or awkward, and that's why I often team up with a male reporter. So I became very just like mindful of different parts of my identity and how they impact the reporting situation, because I feel that video journalism can often be more intimate than in the workflow than print journalism, because most of my colleagues do all the interviews on the phone, whereas I really have to go to people's living rooms, to people's gardens. Often I interview someone in the bedroom. I film them on the subway. So it's just a lot of interaction.
That heightens then the possibility for what? Well, you said for intimacy, but also for distance as well.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. You both are working for or at, or in your case, Reem, you've created media outlets that have a religious label attached to them. And so there is a whole doctrine, at least implied in the name and in the focus. And yet you're journalists and you're trying to be objective and fair. And how do you do that in the context of the kind of journalism that you do that really has this sort of this religious and faith umbrella over it? Reem?
Well, I mean, we're covering issues that are pertinent to Muslim Americans, but that's kind of just it. You know, Muslim State of Mind, yes, it's about Muslim issues and not necessarily Muslim issues, but let's say the majority of the issues are related to the religion in some way. But that's it. I mean, we are still applying basic journalistic practices. We're trying to be objective. We're trying to be fair. We're trying to bring different viewpoints. So a lot of times we'll open it up to callers so that we can get as many opinions in as possible. Sometimes we'll have kind of these debates where we bring in different experts from the by phone from different parts of the country and just say, hey, go at it. Let's just hear what's going on. It's not necessarily always as easy because of resources and time, and it takes a lot of effort to put these shows together. But, you know, we're trying and we're really hoping that the fact that it's called Muslim State of Mind and that we're dealing with certain issues doesn't hold us back from being the best journalists that we can be.
Martina?
So I think there's a saying that says two rabbis, three opinions. And so what I just appreciate about Judaism, the way I experience it through the Ford, is there's a lot of humor and there's a lot of just people take for granted that there's going to be people disagreeing with each other, and there's even some pleasure in these disagreements.
It makes a better story, right?
It makes a better story. And then I always ask myself what works for video, what works for visual storytelling. And I think my approach is very matter of fact, but also try to find the humor, right? So we found this exterminator in Brooklyn who his company is called Nice Jewish Boy. And so he's an Orthodox exterminator, and we just spent a day with him on his job, but he would also talk about what religion means to him and how that impacts the compassion he has for the animals. Finding these stories that are very layered, surprising, human, I think that's what's interesting to me.
Well, I want to thank you both very much. Martina Starosta, a video journalist with the Jewish Daily Forward, and Reem Nasser, one of the hosts of the radio show Muslim State of Mind on WBAI in New York. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This podcast was produced by Rachel Bongiorno and Jocelyn Gonzalez. Our engineer is Chad Bernhard at the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism, where this podcast was recorded. Visit our website, fi2w.org, for earlier podcasts and much more. I'm John Rudolph. Thanks for listening.
Feet in Two Worlds is supported by the Ralph E. Ogden Foundation, the David and Catherine Moore Family Foundation, the Nicholas B. Ottaway Foundation, and listeners and readers like you. To find out how you can help, go to our website, fi2w.org. Feet in Two Worlds, supporting immigrant journalists and bringing their stories to the rest of America. We are a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School.